Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, it was two-man teams down at the Zurich Classic in the Bayou, where we had the Aussies and a very lovable haircut getting in the winner's circle. Plus some Tony Romo talk for him trending again for his golf game and nothing to do with football, a Tiger update, and the LPGA with an awesome winner as well. Plus we're tuned into the Oscars and a fun throwback as well from Michael. This week's guest is Cole Thompson. Great, very informative guest with a 20-minute cram session to get everyone ready for this weekend's NFL draft. Everything you need to know in a really concise conversation. All of it coming up and brought to you by our friends at FlightScope. Mike, I talk about it all the time. I do my quick little backyard warm-up, and I love bringing the Nevo out because it just tells me immediately how far I'm hitting my wedge that day. It doesn't matter if it's 50 degrees, 100 degrees, no matter what the weather. It just gives me that quick information I need, which is why I love it so much. It's a very portable item for golfers out there of any skill capacity to take out to the range. You put it a few feet behind yourself. You coordinate it with your phone. The app is downloaded really easily to your phone, and you can get all the data you need for your golf game from the Nevo unit. So again, it's the FlightScope Nevo. Bryson uses it. Bubba Watson uses it. And our promo code is COL10. That's COL10 for 10% off your Nevo unit today from FlightScope Golf.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Groovit Golf, and Tosi Snacks. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was a walk-up music and mullets galore at the Zurich in New Orleans. Two-man teams, everyone going low together. And pay me my money, because Cam Smith and Mark Leishman, one of my picks, got me my second win on tour for the year. As Cam Smith notched his second career Zurich victory. He does well in team play, it seems.
Yeah.
And this team channeled perseverance, came through in the 18th hole playoff, back on the 18th hole, and beat the South Africans. This was a good Sunday.
It was a great finish, too. It's nice to just have a Sunday setting on the PGA Tour where you've got two groups playing directly with each other, tied going to the last hole. You can't ask for much more than that, no matter what part of the tournament of the week you tuned in for. That's about as good a finish as you can ask for on tour. And especially with the two-on-two format being in play, you had two Australians against two South Africans and made for great theater.
Yeah, and let's just say going into the 18th hole, the chip-in by Mark Leishman on the 17th was just fantastic. Yeah, I mean,
Aussie, oi, oi, oi. They were rolling, especially late when they needed to. You mentioned the nine core values from our friends at the First Tee. Perseverance was the one that was definitely on display today from Leishman and Smith at the Zurich. Really impressive just to see them hanging in there, because it looked like, for all intents and purposes, the South Africans were going to kind of pull away and just kind of coast to victory. But that was not the case throughout the weekend. And those guys are fighters. And Cam Smith and the mullet getting it done, Mike. The mullet that he said he was growing until he won again on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Cam Smith has now won again. But Mike, I've got some bad news for Cam Smith's girlfriend. He is now backtracking on the statement that he's going to cut that mullet. It might be here to stay.
So here's what I have to say if I'm Cam Smith's girlfriend. Threaten to leave him. Because that mullet is atrocious. It's a insult to society, and it needs to go.
It's now becoming a part of him, Mike. Cam Smith is falling in love with the mullet. No matter what the haters are saying, he's falling in love with it.
We all thought that Rory McIlroy's long curls were a thing that we were going to see forever. We all thought that we were going to have some great hair from some great golfers, and they all cut it off. It's time to cut it off, Cam Smith.
Yankees fan talking right there. Look at the clean-shaven guy all the time. So we'll see if Cam Smith eventually
grow a beard. You can keep that really wispy mustache thing you got going on. That's, you know, the peach fuzz that makes you look like you're one of the youngest kids out of there on tour.
If you haven't seen Cam Smith for yourself, be sure to just Google Cam Smith golf and check out the mullet he's been rocking. But congrats to him and Leishman for getting in the winner's circle in Zurich.
It was a lot of fun in New Orleans. We'll talk about where they're headed next in a little bit, but let's go kind of wrap around the horn to the rest of the tours here. It was a European tour and a past guest, Rhys Ienoc, in contention.
That was awesome. It was such a beautiful setting, Mike. Do a quick Google search if you got a second and check out Gran Canaria. It's basically...
What did we call that segment when we did it for a few weeks?
Tour travel segment, basically, in live form here. They played... It's the Spanish islands, the Canary Islands. They're more commonly referred to as, and Gran Canaria is just a like a yachts in the background town, oceanside everywhere you look, like houses.
I feel poor looking at these pictures. I feel poor looking at these pictures.
Just beautifully fake palm trees that are like still new and they're still growing. That's so you can tell like people have like just gotten to some parts of these islands, but a beautiful setting nonetheless. And Rhys Ienoc was unbelievable, Mike. I think he went like 65, 62, and then had a couple of close to par rounds. He finished something like 14 or 15 under par for the week and didn't even finish in the top 10. That's how low these guys were going there. But nonetheless, good to see a past guest on the leaderboard in the Euro Tour.
He'll notch a win. We'll get him in there. He'll be in the winner.
Yeah, I mean, this is now two top 20s since our interview with him. A little bit of a bump there for Rhys.
I think what we're saying is that if you're a golfer who wants to improve your game, you should come on the podcast.
We were talking about the Challenge Tour when I interviewed him, and now I just see him on the European Tour every year. True. So that's a step up.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Korn Ferry Tour. They were in Dallas. Tony Romo, let's get out of the way. He sucks. We know he sucks.
Yes.
He shouldn't be given a free pass on the Korn Ferry Tour with a sponsor exemption. This should be given to the guys grinding it out in the mini tours. But he showed up anyway. He started strong, and then he just fell apart.
It started with an eagle chip in, Mike. Still shot 77 in the first round. I think followed it up with the exact same score again. The bottom line is Tony Romo finished in dead effing last
by
six shots.
Wasted.
Against every single other player in the Korn Ferry field. All five of our past podcast guests on the Korn Ferry Tour did beat him, with the exception of Mark Baldwin, who had to pull out of the tournament. We hope he's feeling better. But nonetheless, it just goes to show you that, like, are we done with this Tony Romo Korn Ferry Tour experiment? We keep doing this over and over again. I like the idea that Tony Romo is a good golfer and can showcase his good golf game, but I don't like the idea of him continuously taking the same spot in this Dallas Korn Ferry Tour event over and over again just to finish dead last and take a spot away from a guy who deserves it. I feel like the experience growing old.
I think that if he wants to play in the Korn Ferry Tour, he needs to Monday Q.
There it is. Thank you. That's the answer right there, Tony. Listen, you want to tee it up again? Be my guest. Yeah. It'll be $175 for the Monday qualifier.
You can go
to your hotel wherever you'd like. And you'll be on the tee at 7 a.m. And you need to shoot 64 to get in. So it's up to you, Tony.
There you go, Tony. You can do that, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, again, you know, not hating on the fact that Tony Romo was definitely an accomplished golfer in his own right at an amateur level, but he definitely does not hold a candle to these Korn Ferry Tour guys. And a little bit of justice for the haters on golf social media like myself to see him finish in dead last there.
So here's a question for you. Do we think Tony Romo will eventually be part of the match?
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be coming real soon with another football player, right? Just name your other quarterback that you want to see out there on the golf.
We already had Brady and Peyton out there, so it's not going to be those two.
Probably not.
Eli?
Yeah, Eli knocking on that door for sure with Peyton as caddy, right, for all of his experience. So yeah, the quarterbacks will be coming to the match soon. I'm surprised we won't see Tony Romo there in short time.
Let's talk about the LPGA Tour, where 23-year-old Brooke Henderson cemented her place as the winningest Canadian golfer of all time.
Nice. Love that. Yeah. Cool. And the thing I love about Brooke Henderson is not only does she have like kind of a smaller frame and really like bust the ball, but she's got the John Daly swing. She just throws the club like way past parallel and just takes a ginormous swing where I think she can almost see the driver head at the top of her swing out of the corner of her eye. She leaves nothing held back on every single golf swing. And that's what I love about her and her attitude. She's won the Women's PGA Championship a few years back and cemented that with a few more wins now on tour. It's just, she's fun to watch. There's no question about it.
Yeah, she really is. And she did a come from behind win at the Hugia Air. I don't know.
Yeah.
LA Open. They were in LA.
Yes.
Right under the Hollywood sign, and came from behind to beat Jessica Korda. So it's not really the Korda Tour, because the Korda sisters aren't you know, rank number one.
Yeah, it's been weeks. I know. So, yeah, what are they doing, right? Really slacking.
I don't know. Yeah. So Brooke Henderson, long game, good touch around the greens too. Legato that win. So
definitely a fan.
We'll keep seeing from her.
Fun to see her in action because she just goes at every shot. I don't really know if she knows how to hit a half shot, which I kind of appreciate. I love the attitude from Brooke Henderson.
Love it. Let's talk Tiger because he smacked himself back up there on social after the PGA Tour announced $40 million for just being good on social.
Yes, convenient timing. And as soon as that social media incentive program gets released from the tour, up pops Tiger Woods with a photo. Mm-hmm. Checking in, right? Well, what were your first reactions when you saw the photo? Just kind of looking at him, knowing kind of what you expected in terms of his rehab process.
I was surprised and not surprised at how big his upper body was because I'm sure that's all he can work out right now.
Yes.
So he's just going hardcore. He's going to turn. He's just going to become all muscle and upper body.
Just like that throwback Tiger that didn't work for a little bit there in the mid 2000s where he tried to get too jacked and just kind of swinging out of funk.
Yeah. You know, that's really what it's going to be. He's going to be like Joe on Family Guy. He's going to be...
This is all complimentary. Tiger Woods' arms are jacked right now.
He's
a specimen from the waist up. Things not looking as great down below. He was definitely in crutches. One leg did not look good. The other looked in decent condition. I will say there were some more recent pictures that emerged as well, too. He was in a cart with his girlfriend following his son, Charlie, around at a junior tournament this past weekend. So I will say the fact that he can get in and out of a golf cart to watch his son play and is able to be up in crutches – I was pretty impressed overall just to see that amount of progress in this time from his accident. So it feels like on the internet, there was a little bit of that moment when people saw the photo where they're like, oh, he's coming back. We don't know when, but like you just kind of got that feeling like, oh, okay, Tiger's like actually going to try and come back, which is exciting to see.
Yeah. I mean, of course he is. Yeah. Of course he is. Yep. I mean, we said it when it happened. If this was any other athlete, he'd be done. But this Tiger Woods, he'll be back and he'll try to win. He probably won't, but he'll try.
There's no doubt he'll try. Yeah.
Let's talk about the First Tee and our partnership with the First Tee of Greater Austin. It's coming up on summer, Alex, which means it's time to go play.
It is. Yeah. I mean, for parents and kids who are listening there who want to get themselves into a program or parents wanting to sign their kids up, it's a great way to do it at any local First Tee chapter. They have summer camps going all summer. I'm going to go check them out for myself and do some content and check out what's actually going on there. Maybe look at the competitions, play nine holes, do some foot golf out there. So I'm looking forward to that visit. But the bottom line is if you want to support the First Tee the way we are, you can go to firstteeaustin.org/partners and check out us or firstteeaustin.org/donate. For all the ways to give. We love this organization. So looking forward to the summer camp footage and good memories, Mike, for myself. Just going to summer camp, learning the game of golf with your friends in some nice warm weather. There's nothing better growing up as a kid.
It's true. It's great. Let's talk about the Valspar in Tampa Bay coming up this weekend on the PGA Tour. We're back in Tampa for the first time since 2019, where Paul Casey became the first player to defend his championship at the Valspar. And we got to do a throwback to when we had Tracy West on just a little while ago.
That's right. Yeah. Who was, I remember I have a past life connection with her. That first golf tournament I ever volunteered at in my hometown in Massachusetts, she was the tournament director on the Champions Tour. Now she directs Valspar, and it was great to catch up with her. Check out the archives if you hadn't heard that interview. She talks about everything that has gone into this tournament week. And now here we sit, Mike, in the few months since we had that conversation. Now, things are now looking up to have a gallery out there. So they are going to be planning for fans. It's going to be limited capacity, like previous tournaments have been. But excited to see the action. The snake pit's always a fun stretch of the course. And I don't know, Mike, have you taken a look at the field? It's got to be pretty decent with the way things are sitting on the calendar right now for the Valspar. But I always enjoy the action from Tampa.
Yeah, you know, we are going to have some big names out there. Dustin Johnson is coming back after his tied for 13th at the Heritage. You're also having Justin Thomas is supposed to be in the field as well. Phil is coming for the first time since 2004. And of course, now two-time defending champ Paul Casey will be there.
Well, you're the one who's on the heater, Mike. So I guess I'm going to quickly just turn over to you. I mean, the Paul Casey three-peat, that can't happen, can it?
No.
There's no way that happens, right?
The one thing that's maybe going for him is that it's been a year since they've played here. So maybe it doesn't really feel like you're defending, but I don't think he's going to three-peat. I do like the chances of another past champion, though, especially after last week. Charles Schwartzel in the field. So,
Sitting right out in front of everyone too. And again, we'll flash back 1 week. I said, hey, everyone, Cam Smith's looking decent. And then you proceeded to bet Cam Smith and I didn't. And look where that got us. So maybe it's worth a dollar on Charles Schwartzel, the South African who came so close. Remember, it was Oosthuizen who hit the bad tee shot in that play.
That's true.
It wasn't Schwartzel who was striking it well all week. So interesting thoughts and looking forward to the Valspar.
We will have our full cards out on Twitter on Wednesday. So keep an eye out there. Remind everyone what our Twitter handles are, Alex.
I am at Course of Life 1 on Twitter. And you're at MWRINC. I should be saying you first, maybe, though, because you're kind of hot right now. I've passed the torch to you for the time being. So let's keep rolling this week.
It's going to be a fun week. We'll have those cards out on Wednesday. Let's switch over to Tuned In, where we talk about what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. Was the Oscars this weekend, right?
Yeah, we admittedly omitted our Academy Award prop bet thoughts last week. That is something we skipped on, so we apologize for that. But I wanted to touch on this briefly. It was good to actually see somewhat of a crowd, a distance safe, vaccinated crowd and whatnot. I'm really done with just the award shows in pandemic era, though. I'm okay with taking a few month break and like getting to normal and having things look normal again later this year. But the bottom line is it was a strangely awkward moment to end the Oscars. Everyone kind of thought that Chadwick Boseman was going to be receiving the Best Actor award. It ended up being not only switched to the last award of the night, which is strange, to bump Best Picture in that spot, but they gave it to Anthony Hopkins. Just a strange, weird, bitter taste at the end of the night to the Oscars. And
83-year-old Anthony Hopkins, who was understandably not there. He was in Wales.
Yes. So, golf course background, by the way. I did note that. Yep. He had bumped right behind him as he accepted.
You know, it was, if you looked at who was winning the awards, it wasn't that much of a surprise. Anthony Hopkins was really the favorite to win. It's just that you wanted Chadwick Boseman to win, and he probably deserved to win more
right moments for the time.
Yeah. Not to be. And he didn't. So, you know, other than that, I didn't get to watch really much of any of the Oscars because I don't have cable still, so I can't.
But
I did get to see some of the shots of the beautifully restored Union Station there in L.A. That did look really cool.
Yeah, and it was actually kind of nice just to see an alternate venue. They had the Dolby Theater there. It was just, it took away from a little bit of the tradition, but it was good to see everyone back in a crowd together.
For myself, though, instead of watching the Oscars, I watched the brand new Mortal Kombat,
which you did tease previously on this podcast, an announcement level. But what's your early quick first thought review before you get to your full review on 3 minutes?
So what I'll say is actually something I said even before I watched the movie is that this better have the Mortal Kombat music or I'm going to be very upset.
Mortal Kombat music or we riot.
And at the end credits, they rolled a version of the music that my wife even said isn't right. And let me pull up the quote so I can be exact here.
Oh man, you're offended.
The whole reason,
pulling up a quote.
The whole reason this movie's bad is because the music is wrong.
Oh man, devastating news for the fans out there, especially the soundtrack fans out there too.
It was, if you like a lot of gore, this movie supposedly originally had an NC-17 rating and then they had to recut to bring it down to R.
NC-17, love that.
Awfully gory. It is really gory.
Good stuff. That is what we're tuned into this week outside of sports. And let's pop back into the world of sports for what's going on this week.
Yeah, let's get into this week's guest because coming up this weekend, it's the NFL draft. Alex, your chances of drafting some talent are ripe for the pick'em because as we all know, the Giants suck at the draft. So they're going to continue to suck in this year. But it's a chance for franchises to go out in there and get a franchise player. So, Alex, you had a 20-minute cram session with Cole Thompson from Sports Illustrated's Fan Nation so we could get caught up on everything we missed and know what to look for.
Yeah, absolutely. We did touch on the Giants. We'll get to that shortly. We touched on the Patriots. We touched on his favorite draft meal. All the little tidbits that you'd love to hear about the quarterbacks, who's going where. Just really, I say the cram session, because when we sit down Thursday, Friday, and this weekend, it's a lot of a blank slate for NFL fans who have not touched football since Super Bowl Sunday. So this will get you tuned up for everything you need to know for this weekend's events.
It's going to be great. But first, as always, we want to let you know that this interview is brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, our friends of the show and makers of the Phone Caddy. The Desert Fox team is based in Arizona, so they know golf, and the phone caddy is crafted by both golfers and engineers. The phone caddy is unique because it mounts right onto your golf cart in seconds in a place where you can actually see and use your phone, keep your yardage and scoring apps at your fingertips, change music, answer calls and texts, and more, all with the phone caddy from Desert Fox. It's the most functional way to keep your phone safe and ready on the course at all times. The phone caddy works seamlessly with almost any phone model and quickly becomes the talk of your foursome. And for our listeners, you can save 10% off your purchase of a phone caddy with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. It comes in a range of colors, and you can even show your support with their patriotic line. So head on over to desertfoxgolf.com to get your phone caddy. And don't forget to use the promo code COURSEOFLIFE to save 10%. Again, that's promo code COURSEOFLIFE at desertfoxgolf.com.
Next up from Houston, Texas, here to give us the NFL draft cram session we all need for this weekend. He's an NFL writer for FanSided and Sports Illustrated's Fan Nation. Got some great draft content, including the ultimate mock draft. The ultimate mock draft. Love that. It's Cole Thompson joining the Course of Life. Cole, how you doing tonight?
Dude, I'm doing pretty good. I'm very excited to be talking about draft stuff with you. The draft is always an interesting subject because if you really don't know what's going to happen until it actually happens. And then we pick winners and losers. And sometimes, actually, I would say about 85% of the time, the winners we pick are actually huge losers. And the losers actually somehow turn out to be not as terrible as we thought. So, you know, it's always one of those times when I view this as a really cool opportunity to kind of get to really build up and see what is actually happening during draft season.
I like that. And we had a lot of connections before we even hopped on. I know you got an Alabama connection and a Texas one. So we'll talk about those teams coming up as well, too, as it pertains to the draft. Let's just kind of get people caught up for football fans who are just kind of having their first contact with the NFL and everything since, you know, Super Bowl weekend in February. You know, free agency was an interesting period for myself as a Patriots fan. It was interesting. The Pats made a little bit of a splashing of the pot with some free agency, but it looks like there's been kind of a lot of waiting and posturing based on who does what in the draft. Just kind of what's your general interpretation of what you see in free agency as it pertains to what we're going to be watching this weekend in the NFL draft?
You know, what I think is really interesting about the free agency more than anything else is for those teams that feel like they're a piece away, this is the year I expect them to kind of move up into the draft. I expect them to start moving up into the top 10. For teams who view themselves as maybe a few pieces away, maybe they can still contend for a playoff spot, but they know that they're not at that exact same level as all these other top level teams. You're probably trying to trade back. You're trying to get a little bit more value for that pick, that high end selection where you can probably still get a, I would say, upper echelon talent in the mid range because of, to me, anyone between that 10 to 25 range, you have probably all the similar draft grade on them. It's really just based off of scheme fit at that point. It's based off of, you know, what personally you're missing. You're looking at lucrative contracts. Those are all different kind of areas. And then draft value. You know, what is the actual price to move down three spots? What is the price to move up a spot? Because we've seen it every year. You know, teams like would move up just two spots to secure a player they truly like, and they give up multiple picks later on. But if they do feel they are a piece away, it probably is worth it for that season because of they're trying to contend. They're trying to show that they're right there. So, you know, a team like New England, they did a really good job incentivizing Cam Newton's contract to where if it is $16 million, it's because if he's met all these incentives, he's made this contract worth every single penny. They're in the playoffs. They're going deep. They've added all these $50 million pieces to be able to be true contenders this season. But what they've also done is they put themselves in a good spot is if they don't believe in him and they don't believe that he can be the actual franchise guy moving forward, they're a piece away, which is a quarterback, to where they can move up, to where they have the pieces for a young quarterback to actually be successful next season, where they actually have some, they have some pieces to where they can actually put up some quality numbers and they can compete. So the biggest thing with free agency is you started to see a few teams, a team like New England that never spends money in free agency, spend money in free agency. And they did that because they know the feeling of what it means to be bottom of the cellar, not in that conversation. And in the post Tom Brady era, you never thought you'd hear it. And now you do.
Very unfamiliar territory, Cole.
And it's just, it's so amazingly forgotten that you're trying to make sure that that never happens again. So, you know, Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick open up the wallets and they start paying guys and they start making sure that they're in a good line. but they're also in a really good line to move up or down. I think a lot of people are not also forgetting they could move down if they truly believe in Cam. There's not a quarterback on the board. There's not a player on the board that's right there that they could probably just go ahead and draft. So I think that they're in a really interesting spot. And there's a lot of teams like that. Teams that spent money in free agency, if they feel like that they can move down, they can move down. If they feel like they can move up, then they can move up.
Love it. Okay, cool. So with that, we'll get back to what we think the Patriots might do at 15. There's a few options there, but let's talk about just what's at the top. I know the quarterback is potentially, hopefully, I'm crossing my fingers, maybe in play for New England football fans. But right at the top, let's just go to the chances of what's going to happen, right, with 1, 2, and 3, just so everyone knows. Give me the percentage chance that Trevor Lawrence is going to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Is it 100, or is there any doubt at all at the last second here?
No, it's 100. I mean, the dude literally tweeted out, thank you, Jacksonville, and thank you, Jaguars fans. I mean, he tagged at Jaguars. That's all the information I need to know. He's going to be a Jacksonville Jaguar.
So 100%. After that, we're looking at the second pick now with the New York Jets, who are looking at Zach Wilson. I want you to give me your percentage chance with that, though, in terms of percentage chance they do move forward with Zach Wilson, or do you think there's a chance they may go in a different direction?
99.992, I will say, is their chance, because okay. Keep in mind, the biggest thing was there was an opportunity for the Philadelphia Eagles to trade up to the original number 3 pick with Miami before they moved back to number 12. And the reasoning was Howie Roseman very much was enamored by Zach Wilson and his big playability and what he's able to do working downfield. But because of the connections now with San Francisco, also throw San Francisco in the mix with Philadelphia, and throw Philadelphia in the mix with New York, who has both the former assistant GM for the Philadelphia Eagles and Joe Douglas, and now the former defensive coordinator in Robert Saleh from the San Francisco 49ers. It was a given that if the guy that they liked was not there at number 3, it means he's going at number 2. So when Philadelphia moved back and San Francisco moved up, San Francisco knew Robert Saleh in this offense would be taking Zach Wilson, and Philadelphia knew Zach Wilson would not be on the board at number 3. So I got to go 99.9992. There had to be something very controversial with Zach Wilson not to be the pick at number 2.
Okay, sounds good. So that's the way a lot of drafts have seemed to play out with the first couple picks. And then pick number 3 is the magic one where things could actually start to happen. Just give me a quick 30-second prediction on what you think is going to happen with that third pick, whether it's a Fields or a Mac Jones or something else entirely different.
You know, if I was John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, I would take Trey Lance personally. And I'm going against the grain with this because of what you want is a balanced guy, someone who is a pocket awareness guy and someone who's a little bit more mobile. And I think Trey Lance kind of fits both those molds. But what this really comes down to is who is going to be in control of this team. Is it going to be Kyle Shanahan? And if that's the case, you go with Mac Jones. If it's going to be John Lynch, you go with Justin Fields because that's what he's looking for. Ultimately, Kyle Shanahan is this offensive guy who everyone thinks can win with whatever he wants. So go ahead and get him his guy. And his guy, according to everyone that I've spoken to and everyone that I've heard, is Mac Jones. So at this point, I got to lean Mac Jones.
Okay. Yeah. No, I was wishing he'd be on the board potentially because I know there's a lot of Patriots Alabama affiliation, which you know very well too. Haven't gone to school there. So let's talk about those Patriots now as they sit at 15. Obviously, we had the Cam Newton experiment, which seemingly fell flat on its face. We bring him back on that very contract-friendly deal that's incentivized heavily. There's been some posturing for Jimmy Garoppolo. That's kind of fizzled recently. The million-dollar question really for you, Cole, is does Bill Belichick have the balls to actually get a QB and draft it at 15 or move up? Or is it the same as usual where Bill postures and throws a lot out there, but ends up just kind of making a safe draft pick? What do you see happening?
You know, the biggest thing is that they're going to have to move up. I mean, and the biggest thing of all is who's the quarterback that's sitting there and do they like the quarterback that's sitting there? Because of keep in mind that the Atlanta Falcons are potentially moving down in the draft. Keep in mind that maybe San Francisco is moving down and there could be a team like the Chicago Bears who need to find their franchise quarterback. They have to get this one right. Who might be willing to bet it all to move up to number 4. And if they take Justin Fields, is Trey Lance the guy you want to build your franchise around? Or if Justin Fields is somewhere to fall to like at number 8 with Carolina, are you willing to give up that extra first round pick in 2022 to make sure that you go get your guy who in my opinion, is very much overlooked at this point because of how much people have kind of dug into the Justin Fields narrative, which I completely disregard and disagree with.
Yeah, speak on that. I like that. Yeah.
Every single level. But I do think he does need time to develop. And Josh McDaniels, I think, would give him that time. But you're not going to get him at 15 because there's going to be teams in that 19, 20. I would even throw Pittsburgh in that 24 range who could be willing to move up somewhere before 15 to go get a guy like Justin Fields should he drop. But the question is Bill Belichick willing to give up these picks? And what is also that pick value? You know, there's the trade value chart that a lot of teams look at still, and they kind of break down what's the actual trade value, a plus 400, a plus 600. What is that pick actually worth? And how much would it cost for me to move either up or down? What could be my collateral back? If Belichick doesn't offer something, and at this point, I think everyone would be very, very much knowing, and it'd be very telling that they'd be trading up for a quarterback if one were to fall that far. I would have to say teams could probably stipend Belichick and the Patriots as much as they want because they know that there's a team out there that wants to go get a quarterback. So it really comes down to price, and it comes down to draft range. Should a quarterback fall with a team like, I would say, the Detroit Lions, who are looking to move out of that number seven spot? Well, what's the price for it? Is if it's a team like the Denver Broncos, who I think is going to be safe and play it one more year with Drew Lock, they probably want to move down and go get a linebacker. And there's not a linebacker worth taking at number nine. There probably is one worth taking at 15. What's the price going to be? Is it going to be a second round pick and a third round pick? Is it going to be a first round pick next year and a third round pick this year? I mean, it really comes down to trade value and what it would cost to move up or down for Bill Belichick. And at that point, I feel like it's going to just be willing to bet it all. And if he's willing to bet it all, by all means, go do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Bill Belichick kind of has a history of shopping in the clearance rack. So we'll see. I know he's going to try and get the best possible deal he can. I'm very curious to see what he does. We've never been in a spot like this at 15. So it's a very unique position for Patriots fans. I want to talk a little bit about your Alabama background and kind of pose a coin flip to you. The New York Giants, my co-host Michael, desperately wants to know what they're going to do. I believe they're sitting at the 11th pick, I think. There's been some talk of maybe a wide receiver. There's two Alabama guys around there in Jalen Waddle and Devontae Smith. I guess just first off, maybe in addition to what you think the Giants might do, who do you like between those two receivers at the pro level?
You know, I think it's kind of a weird question because it's also based off what is your biggest need. Do you need speed or do you need agility or do you need route running or do you need hands? I mean, because both these players have all the intangibles that I think could make them really star-studded receivers. Now, personally, I believe in Jalen Waddle a little bit more if he was healthy. And that's the biggest key is he going to be healthy coming off a torn ACL and a torn ACL that he might have even done a little bit more damage because he wanted to play in that national title game against Ohio State. So you got to make sure that all the medicals are checked, all the, you know, the T's are crossed, the I's are dotted. But as a route running standpoint, pure speed, just great in the open field. A good player that is a mismatch. He's done it since his days in high school. But if you're looking for a pure route runner, I actually think Devontae Smith is a little bit better of a route runner. I think that his route tree is a little bit stronger. He is able to maneuver himself and put himself in positions to where he can be successful as a number one target. I do worry about his size. You know, 175 for a 6'2" receiver is a little bit underweight, and you want to get a little bit more meat on those bones. But if you can get some meat on him and he can keep that speed and he can keep that route running ability, he's got surefire hands. He's done a great job with contested catches, and he makes these acrobatic plays that you just go, wow, how is that even possible? I mean, there was the catch against LSU.
Yes.
Back in the end zone. Everyone just goes, what? Like, what? How did that happen? And again, it's just based off pure talent alone. But I do think it's all just based off what you're looking for. You're not getting a bad choice with either. You're getting a choice, though, based off of what your need is. If it's speed, you got to go Waddle. If it's definitely route running, you got to go Smith. But you're not going to miss with either one.
Think the Giants pulled the trigger on one of those guys, or are they just going to go with the boring pick like they did last year?
No, I think they're going to trade back, actually. There's a report out there that says that they're looking to move back in the draft, potentially, because of what I believe is they're going to add an edge rusher. And a guy like Jalen Phillips is a name that I keep seeing popping up in this conversation with the New York Giants. Everyone is talking about how they need an edge rusher for Patrick Graham's defense. And Jalen Phillips, to me, is the best edge rusher in a very overall lopsided, weak edge class, in my personal opinion, that I would probably see worth taking at maybe 17, at maybe 18, at maybe 22. but not at 11. If they do go trade back to, like, say, 15, I can see them bolstering their offensive line and giving help for Daniel Jones in year three. But I'm going to be completely honest with you. I don't think it's a boring pick. I think Elijah Vera Tucker out of USC is a fantastic player and someone who can be a great mauler in the trenches, exactly what you already have with Will Hernandez, but on the opposite side. You already know what you got with Matt Part. He kind of came on really strong at the end of the season. You're hopeful that Andrew Thomas can build off of last season because, you know, he was an up and down for most of the season, but the last two games, he actually wasn't as terrible as I think people give him credit for. So if you can build off that and you still have Will Hernandez for another year and you still have now Elijah Vera Tucker to play that guard position and you address all these other needs in free agency with wide receiver and tight end with Kyle Rudolph and you still have that flex option with Evan Ingram, this is an offense that can win. And I think in a very heavy defensive class overall, there's not that much of a value difference for me between a guy like Jalen Phillips and maybe Azeez Ojulari who falls in round two. So there's a lot of things that I think I have to convey that way, but I could see them moving back. If so, it would either be for an edge rusher like a Jalen Phillips, or I think it'd be to bolster their offensive line with an Elijah Vera Tucker, or if by some miracle he falls, Rashawn Slater would be really fun to see play inside.
Nice. Cool. That's a wealth of information indeed for the New York Football Giants fans out there as well to appreciate those perspectives. Again, it's Cole Thompson. He's at Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter. You can check out everything that he's doing content wise leading up to this weekend's NFL draft. Let's hit some quick questions right now. Just people who are perusing this week and catching up as they get ready to watch the draft this week. How about give me a random off the board name or just someone who is super fun to like pull up a YouTube highlight reel for that maybe people don't know about yet.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Elijah Moore. He was a name that I really wasn't interested in until about a month ago, I would say. And what most people know him as the Ole Miss receiver that did the dog peeing trick that cost them the Egg Bowl a couple of years ago.
Oh,
and
yes,
now he is one of the most interesting receivers I've seen because everyone talks about this Kadarius Toney, these gadget players who are so valuable, these Deebo Samuels, the Curtis Samuels of the NFL. Well, Elijah Moore is that, but he's a much cleaner route runner already at the professional level. So I think a team like Green Bay, I think a team like early in the second round, like maybe a Cincinnati would love to have him because of he's a good, clean route runner. But the biggest thing of all is that he was almost 100% on contested catches last season. And towards the end of the year, he averaged over 200 yards per game. Turn on the last three games of the 2020 season, and there might have not been a better receiver in the SEC than Elijah Moore. He's a really talented receiver, and I totally get the hype for him.
Nice, Elijah Moore. YouTube reel if you're looking it up right now, trying to get into your draft research before things get going soon. Want to touch on a team to watch, maybe who's going to be a winner of the draft or just a mover and shaker? Who's making a ton of action right now that maybe is kind of lying in the trenches that could be the subject of a lot of news come draft weekend?
I think it's Miami. I really do. You know, Miami's already moved up, down, and up again to make sure that they were in line to go get their guy. But if their guy is not there, what's stopping them from moving down if a quarterback is there at six and getting more picks? I mean, think about this for a second. Nobody knows what's going to happen with Tua Tagovailoa. We hope that he's going to be a breakout star next year. But if he isn't, we know that if everything does work out in favor of this other player, Deshaun Watson probably is not going to be a Houston Texan again. So what we could say is that they're trying to package all these picks for later on to potentially send to Houston just as collateral just later on if Deshaun Watson would be cleared. And to move up into that number six pick, you're probably going to have to give up a first round pick next year. So that first round pick that they gave up to Philadelphia, which was their first round pick, they get back and still probably are in line for a good defensive player, maybe a wide receiver like a Devonta Smith, maybe a Jalen Waddle. So they're going to be a really interesting team. They have two first round picks. I could see them moving out of both spots to gain more picks down the line and use them for future collateral to maybe make a big time trade in the 2022 offseason.
Oh boy, man, potentially one of those Alabama receivers in the AFC East against the Patriots. That sounds scary to me. I'll be watching out for that. A couple things I wanted to touch on because a lot of people are going to be interested in the viewing experience of the NFL draft. Last year was definitely an anomaly of a year. We had Roger Goodell in his basement eating M&Ms in various different outfit changes throughout the course of the weekend. I'm curious, just tell us it's going to be a little bit different or a little bit better. What's the like fan interactivity level going to be this year in Cleveland? And what can like viewers actually look forward to seeing this weekend on the broadcast?
So I think the biggest thing is that you will see live picks. You will see players that take the podium. You will see players, you know, be able to greet the commissioner. Now, again, I think that they have to do a 14-day, you know, quarantine. I think that they have to be sure that they are of COVID, you know, COVID vaccine. You know, they do have the vaccine.
Yep.
And I do wonder what's going to be that case with the fan base. I know that they are going to be spread out further than they ever have been before. So that's going to be a completely different subject. But there are supposedly going to be fans in Cleveland being able to watch the draft live. So, it's going to be like a normal draft weekend, but very restricted, very closed off, and of course, still very much following COVID-19 protocols.
Nice. Love that. Okay. And again, for everyone who wants to tune in and hear more of what you got prepared, tell everyone about the ultimate mock draft, where they can find it and what they can expect in your kind of extremely comprehensive preview. You just touched on things here, but where can people learn more from you?
So the Ultimate Mock Draft is actually founded by the Locked On Podcast Network. It's all 32 major hosts of every NFL team joined by multiple different analysts from, I believe we had on Dez Bryant. I believe we've had on Torrey Holt. We've had on Michael Fabiano. We've had on Brian Baldinger and a few other names who help break down all 32 first round picks. And of course, several picks in the second round. Top prospects to watch for, who are names that are starting to rise up as superstars, and also who are players that definitely you need to keep a close eye on. You can listen on the Odyssey channel. You can also listen at lockedonpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcast listening systems.
Love that. And our final question, we typically like to ask our 19th hole question, like if we got a golfer on the podcast, but for the purposes of the draft and the draft watching weekend, I'm curious, you're pretty locked in. You're more locked in than the average football fan might be. What's going to be kind of your move in terms of like draft weekend snacks or meals, or how do you see yourself laying it all out this weekend?
So actually, I am going to be on a radio program for all hours of the first NFL of the first round of the NFL draft. So if you want to listen to that, go listen on sportsmap.com.
Okay.
Jake Asman show. I am the co-host for that show. It'll be between me, him, former NFL quarterback Hudson Mason, and former NFL executive Howard Balzer. Will all be on the show breaking down all first round picks. So I'm actually not going to be watching or eating anything. But I will say, on round two or years that I don't do a podcast where I'm actually on live TV, I usually try to have a nice glass of whiskey and sit back and eat a buffalo wing. I love wings. I think it's a perfect combination. I know whiskey and wings don't really work well together, but I promise you, when you dip it in ranch, you can't really taste the difference.
Yeah, you know what? That's a very football-friendly food. I know we're not exactly getting the football, but just having the draft and just getting those type of snacks back in our system, nice tease for what's upcoming this fall, indeed. Hey, Cole Thompson, thank you so much for hopping on again at Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter. Look forward to the draft coverage and everything else you got coming this football season.
Yeah, Alex, thanks for having me, man.
That interview with Cole Thompson is brought to you by our friends at Groove It Golf, makers of the Groove It Golf Brush. You've seen it on the bag of tour caddies and your favorite athletes and golf personalities on social media, and it's the brush to get for the 2021 golf season. This brush's patented pump sprays water or cleaning solution right onto the club face for you, making it quick and efficient to clean clubs or even your golf ball in seconds. The Groove It brush includes a detachable magnet so you can bring the brush to the club head instead of having to bring the club head to the brush. And the Groove It brush comes with a 3-year bristle guarantee. That means if you can wear out the brush head cleaning golf clubs in 3 years, and I doubt you'll be able to do that, you'll send it back and Groove It will get you a free replacement. So prepare to be amazed with the consistency and control that Clean Grooves will give you. Using your existing golf clubs with a Groove It, you'll get the spin, trajectory, and consistency you're looking for. So head on over to grooveitbrush.com to get your Groove It brush with free shipping in the U.S. Again, that's grooveitbrush.com to get your Groove It brush today. And we're back. Great interview there with Cole Thompson. Good to know about the draft, which will be in person.
I appreciate that. It's just going to be good to have the peeps together in Cleveland. You know,
we don't need to see it from everyone's basements.
We don't. Though that was nice temporarily in the moment last year, I'm definitely good with the view of Roger Goodell's basement. So I'm glad to hear we're having actual people come to the podium, make picks, that draft environment we need. I mean, I'm pumped, Mike. You know, I haven't had this much energy toward an NFL draft in 20 years because of the quarterback situation in New England. Yep. I'm going over to my buddy Anthony's house. This is our first actual hangout. I get to set foot inside his house for the first time in over a year and just sit and watch the draft. So it's going to be a fun weekend for everyone.
It's going to be great. Giants are going to suck it. So
I didn't love that. You know, that idea of the Giants moving down. That's like the least attractive thing you want to hear if you're getting ready to watch the draft. So, yeah, I think your team might move down, but maybe you can dream and get one of those Alabama wide receivers. We'll see.
You know, at least I'm not Tom Brady, who's just pissed at the NFL right now in general.
Jersey
number rule, whatever the hell it is. It's just like
so the new number rule is essentially that certain defensive players can now wear single digit jersey numbers like they do in college. So like a linebacker wearing number 7 or something like that. Brady hates it from like the blocking perspective and getting confused by who to block and whatnot. And he went on some serious rants on social media. Yeah. The guy who has everything in life, quite literally, including the Super Bowl championship right now, upset at a new NFL number rule at the age of 43. He doesn't quit.
He ranted, but then he kind of made fun of himself a little while later. So,
He got a call from the NFL offices in New York saying, we appreciate your opinion, but you might want to tone it down.
Maybe the NFL should offer an extra $40 million pot to being good on social media.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he'd be gunning for that number one spot. That's for sure.
There you go. the other thing we'd love to see, though, Alex, is $40 million for our podcast. And to get us there, we want all of you listening to rate us 4 stars, leave us a positive review.
That is how it
starts. Subscribe on all your podcast apps. And if you don't think we should get $40 million, then you need to realize that we're being sarcastic. There's no possible way for us to get $40 million doing this.
There isn't. Unless you guys put Desert Fox Golf and Toasty Snacks out of business in the next week or so. I don't really see any path there. But nonetheless, thank you for listening and tuning in. We do appreciate you being part of the Course of Life. Fun announcements coming in the weeks ahead, too, as we continue with this week's episode. Let's talk a little baseball real quick and do an alma mater shout out before we end with food here. The Red Sox are still winning baseball games, not as eloquently and not with as much style points as they were in the first couple weeks of the season, but nonetheless, just still sitting pretty on top of the AL. Yeah. It's a nice sight to be seen as early as it is.
Yeah, and that's all I want to say about baseball right now.
Yeah, there's not much else to report in the other half of the division there, especially nothing down in the Bronx at all, too.
No, I don't. Nope. Not talking about it. Not going to go there right now. Let's talk about Quinnipiac. Yeah, because the women's golf team won the MAC championship. They're headed to the NCAA championship. Go Bobcats.
This will be nice because we're going to actually get to see them on the Golf Channel. I think they're going to have some coverage of the regional events. They always do a great job covering the finals where they have the 5-on-5 match play team head-to-heads for the national championship. That's one of the best theaters in golf, if you haven't seen it. But it'll be good to follow the Bobcats through the regional. Just maybe see if they can sneak through and get to the finals. A great moment for the school, though. Shout out to Lady Bobcats.
That's hashtag always having the food.
Yes, thanks to Toasty Bites, our friends. Promo code COL20 for 20% off at toasty.com/COL. These are good, healthy granola bar, super bite snacks that are easy to keep in your gym bag, golf bag, in your car, and they're good and ready on the go. We love them. It's Toasty Bites, promo code COL20. And a recap of something I've been waiting to do for over a year. It happened, Mike.
Yes.
I sat and I ate dinner inside. Dun, dun, dun.
And as far as we know, you do not currently have COVID.
As far as we know, I am just fine, thanks to a couple of shots in my arm. It was great to just sit there. You know, I got refills on my water. You know, just the little things you forget about. You know, yes, I'll have another beer. Yes, I would like a side of ranch. And I'm okay with waiting a minute or two for you to go get it and bring it back to me. You know, so we took our time. We had a great Friday night dinner, appetizers, desserts, the whole nine yards. And it was just nice to sit inside the air conditioning.
It's nice.
Yeah. What were you up to?
I made Japanese milk bread.
That's right. You mentioned this by name. Yeah. I didn't dig too far into this, but what ended up being the final kind of consistency of this product?
It's like a sandwich white bread. It's really the best thing to compare it to, I guess. It's a little sweeter. It's got a better texture. It's certainly no Wonder Bread. It's better than that.
Do you physically put in a lot of actual just straight up milk or what type of cream is going in there?
There is about there's under a just under a cup of milk in there.
Not too painful.
So, but, you know,
and taste results on a sandwich on toast yet? What's been the review?
By itself, it's good. Used it to make some Texas toast last night to go with dinner, and used it this morning for a egg sandwich. It was good. I liked it.
Good stuff.
I have to be honest though. I think that I really still want that kind of rustic bread. So I think I may go back to making a more rustic loaf next time.
It's nice to mix it up. And I mean, there's no lack of imagination when it comes to you and baking bread. Exactly. As anyone can see on Instagram, check us out. I'm at Course of Life, Alex. We're at COL Podcast and you're at MWRINC for all our food picks as well. We've got some fun food news in the pipeline. We'll just leave it at that. We thank everyone for joining this week's episode of Course of Life, and we'll talk to you next week.